And it brings us up to 19 minutes to 6 on Classic Drive. High time we got around to Culture File, presided over by Luke Clancy.
With the rise of binge listening via Serial the Podcast, Richard Linklater's decade-spanning film project Boyhood and history consumed as art in Duncan Campbell's Turner Prize-winning work, was culture in 2014 more about how we consumed than what we consumed? Or was 2014 all about the time we spent consuming? For a Culture File end-of-year special, we assembled a panel featuring musician and documentary maker Rachel Nicquin and prize-winning advertising eminence Owen Nolan to talk about what they consume this year and how.
One of the things that there seems to be less and less disagreement about is Duncan Campbell, who's currently showing at IMA and who's sneaked into Kilmainham with this show of films he'd created. He's an artist who was born in Dublin but has been associated with the Glasgow School of Art quite a lot. And he sort of sneaked into Dublin and while the exhibition was on, won the Turner Prize. Did he deserve the Turner Prize? Or is the Turner Prize worth anything?
I think he did deserve it. I think it's 4 films. And I think his most recent one is actually my least favourite. But I think he definitely deserved it in terms of who he was up against. I would have thought he was the strongest contender in the shortlist. But I think he deserved it on his own merit as well, in terms of he's doing something that I personally have a real need for, which is telling you the news that you don't hear, giving you this complicated story, giving you an in-depth kind of understanding of why things happened rather than headlines. And I'm hungry for that kind of story and that background and the interviews, the lengthy interviews. And you don't get it on the news anymore.
I mean, his style has a lot in common with Luke Fowler, who he worked with. Again, it's about kind of finding these topics that may, in fact, have structured the world we live in, but we just don't know it. We just don't know enough information to see how much they've structured our world. I mean, one of the films is about John DeLorean and his plant in Northern Ireland, which we always kind of hear as a story of this maverick car dealer and his cocaine habit and the various ways he raised his funding. And here it's sort of offered to us as an episode in Labour history.
Yeah, and it's also it's shown in its complexity. You know, he portrays John DeLorean as a very likable character, and you can really see that John DeLorean probably thought he was doing his best, and although he was making mistakes that had consequences, when you get the full story, you can see that no one is trying to be the bad person in any situation. And it's like these modern kind of TV series where the bad guys aren't only bad and the good guys aren't only good. Everyone's always good and bad. And it's true of everybody, but it's not the way the news makes us think the world works. And so for me, it's just this real sense of like, it helps you to understand why things actually happened, because when you hear the stories that are stereotypical good guy, bad guy, you know that that's not true. So it's helpful in terms of understanding the dynamic of what was actually happening.
He makes the point during the film that works of art, if you want to calculate roughly what they're worth, surprisingly, the measure of them, the size of them, is going to play a big part in what the value was of them was. And in his own films, exactly how many minutes was going to be part of determining if the film was any good, which is a standard that, you know, I often bring to the box office. And there is this great test that if a film is like 89 minutes long, then it must be a stinker, because that's the kind of minimum length anything could be. But this year we were offered quite a few of these epic films that really kind of used time in a very spectacular way. And I think one of the most striking was Boyhood, and this Richard Linklater film that he conceptualized years ago to try and follow a young child growing up. It seemed he talked about how for a director time is a material. I think he uses time more effectively maybe than any other director around.
There seems to be a lot of real time chronicling as a sort of diary. It's probably a word. Diaristic chronicling in film. I mean, it's kind of Boyhood, the structure of it seems to pay homage to 7-Up, to Michael Apted's, and then I wonder whether it's available technology that I was looking at the Brown sisters, the Nixon's 40 years of photographs of the same sisters, and you can find lots and lots online of people taking selfies every day for a year or something like that. I don't know whether it's part of the zeitgeist and the available technology has facilitated it, or whether it's just triggered by the technology. But it seems that is an incredible use of it.
And the sense of time, I think you're right, Luke. There's this, at the moment, there's this definite exploration of time in everything I'm reading and watching and listening to. It seems to be present.
As a material, it's quite interesting. One of the assumptions, I think, in the kind of the selfie thing, is that you take control of time in some way by this photographic process and by this chronicling, whereas it might feel it spirals away from us. These are attempts to wrest back control.
Maybe it's just latter-day diary writing, probably the same urge by chronicling your daily existence, whether it's the hunt on the cave walls, that you somehow memorialise it but prevented its absence.
So I was wondering, was it more than Samuel Pepys, or was it more than a diary?
I think there might be something more than that happening. I think there's maybe a sort of a gentrification of physics happening as well. You get like a lot of like pseudo-scientific articles cropping up where, as a mainstream, we're introduced to these very, very scientific concepts, but maybe we don't understand them, but we're still, the ideas are presented to us and we are thinking about them. So you have physicists telling us about string theory and we don't really understand it, but we go away and we have like a few little ideas about, well, maybe time doesn't even exist, and I think that is in the shared consciousness.
Yeah, it's like a gentrification of stoner consciousness.
I don't know if it's, in my case, whether it's gentrification or it's a dumbing down of things, because I don't know much about string theory, but I'm pretty familiar with the laws of the prime directive.
The prime directive is fictional, isn't it?
Not entirely sure.
I think string theory might be fictional too. The other way that people are taking control of time, maybe, is the binge watch and increasingly the binge listen, as though with the prosthesis of a box set, you can somehow wedge a piece of time out of the continuum and hold on to it. Now, you may have to spend it with House of Cards or The Wire or latterly Game of Thrones, but somehow they're helping you repossess time. Discuss, children.
Well, indeed, and we'll come back to that complex question when we spend another chunk of time with our panellists Rachel Ni Quinn and Owen Nolan next time on Culture File.